This is Ashley Hodge with the Sikkim 365 podcast. I'm coming to you after Baylor's pretty dominant 75-58 win over Michigan State in the battle for Atlantis. It was a championship game, and the Bears, once again, bring home a November championship like they've done so many times before. We're getting pretty spoiled by this. I'm joined by Ron Wadley on the podcast. He's a Funky Town Bear. Isn't that right, Funky Town Bear? I always forget usernames.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, Ron's a diehard basketball fan. He's been we spent many a time in Kansas City at a 2 a.m. karaoke bar sometimes. You know, we won't go too much into that. But we've had some fun on basketball trips for sure. So, Ron, I know you watched this game. You know, what were your overall impressions? Did you like what you saw today?
I really liked what I saw in the second half, Ashley. The first half, we allowed their pick and roll to get to the rim, which caused us some fits. We didn't guard it quite as well as we normally do. Second half, we really locked in defensively and on the glass and just took control of the game, which was great to see against an Izzo coach team that's just known for being tough and hard-nosed.
Yeah, no doubt. We knew going into the game that one thing Michigan State, if they had a big weakness, it was turnovers. They were not a good team taking care of the basketball. And they did a pretty good job in the first half protecting the ball. But in the second half, the wheels kind of came off for them. They turned it over quite a bit. They ended up with 19 turnovers on the day. Baylor only has 10. That's a huge difference in the game. Bears, like you said, on the glass, you know, I looked at the stats and I was like, surely they out-rebounded Michigan State by like 10. But it was only one, you know, 32-31 on the glass. The other thing that Baylor did a really good job was in the first half, Michigan State, you know, made quite a few open threes or even contested threes. But in the second half, they just really shut down the three-point line, 0-for-7 for the Michigan State. I only remember one really clean look from Sparty. But, you know, it was a very impressive performance. I was getting a lot of texts from some diehard basketball fans, including some diehard Kansas fans that were like, are you kidding me? How are you guys this good again? You know, I mean, there was a little bit of like depression setting in. Like they thought, oh, we're going to run away with the Big 12 this year. You know, Baylor had their year, but it was COVID. And then all of a sudden they're like, the realization is, are you joking? Like how in the world did he assemble this kind of a team again? So I think a lot of Big 12 fans probably feel that way right now.
They have to. And Cryer's a walking bucket. He yep. reminds me of Lace in that when he gets steps foot in the gym, he's in range.
Right.
And
oh, he
and
won
he and
really
Flagler,
deep three. Yeah.
Oh, and the step back early in the first half
yeah.
was just beautiful.
Yeah.
And so people didn't know about him last year, and Flagler was a little unheralded. You got the two freshmen coming in, and all of a sudden, here we come.
Right. Yeah, and you know, Flagler had 5 assists, 0 turnovers. He's not still shooting like we know he's capable of shooting, but boy, he's put together 2 really good games back to back. You know, the questions about his hand injury and how he would respond have been answered with how he closed out the games against VCU and then this Michigan State game. I mean, we were up 10, and you know, he gets that corner 3. That, I mean, just yeah. really was the dagger, you know, that put us up 13. And after that, it was just a difficult road for Michigan State mentally, you know, to get back in the game. James Akinjo took a lot of criticism in the VCU game, turned it over. I think he had 2 assists, 7 turnovers. And this game, first half, he, you know, was okay. I mean, he wasn't great, but boy he played a terrific second half. 3 steals. He's only credited with 5 assists. He gets 3 turnovers. One of those turnovers was a perfect pass to John Wachachua for an alley-oop that Jonathan just fumbled. I mean, really, that turnover should go to Jonathan.
Yeah.
But, you know, so
what,
go ahead.
It looked like in the second half when he shifted more to being a distributing point guard yeah. more so than a shoot first point guard, the game changed for him.
Right. And I think he's that way. I think, you know, the stats prove it out, you know, that he's that way. I just think
sure.
that there's times when the offense breaks down. And you know, you saw this with Davion a little bit too. I mean, every guard, when the offense breaks down, is going to have to take difficult shots. And
sure.
sometimes the guys, you know, coming that are more off the ball, like a Flagler or a Brady Heslip, Macy Oteague, you know. And I mean, you just don't have as many, like, you know, end of shot clock situations where you're trying to force up, you know, something to make sure, you know, you get a look. So I think sometimes the basketball fans that don't watch a lot of basketball fail to realize that, and then they just start overly criticizing the sure. player that ends up taking that tough shot. But, you know, really it's because the offense didn't do what it was supposed to do the previous 20 seconds, you know, before that. But yeah, I mean, I'm really high on Akinjo. I just think he's going to be the one thing I love about him more than anything is just his competitiveness. I mean, he's got that Davion Mitchell dog, you know, I'm going to try to destroy you type of mindset.
He absolutely does. And he has great feet.
Yeah.
The guys like him who are just absolute dogs like that, they always have good feet. They're moving their feet. They're still reaching and poking balls out, but their feet are in position, which keeps them in position to do those kinds of things without getting into foul trouble, without, you know, committing dumb turnovers.
Right.
And so there's a real positive there with him.
No question. And Kendall Brown, another really productive second half. I mean, he really got the Bears going in that early second half with some dunks, you know, a layup, and, you know, that was contested, you know, deflections. He was only credited with one steal and only one rebound, but he was active and on the glass and with, you know, with his hands. Another efficient day, 6 for 7 from the floor, which is great to see. And I thought Matthew Meyer played terrific. And Sohan also, all three of those wings, I think, were just really big today. Matthew was 4 for 8 from the field. He missed both of his three-point attempts, but he had some really nice drives to the bucket, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, an assist, a steal. You know, very, very active game for him. And then Sohan, 8 points. Once again, really good rebounding from him, 5 rebounds. And a block as well, and made a 3, which was good to see. So I mean, all across the board, there were some great contributions from the bench. And we talked about the 3 guards. You know, Flo and Jonathan continue to do really good things in the paint. They're just so smart. They move their feet well on defense. They don't give up anything easy.
Yeah.
I mean, Michigan State got a couple good looks at the rim in the first half, and those were just not there in the second half at all.
Correct. Yeah. The Michigan State folks got upset when Flo drew the charge in the first half, but it was 100% the right call. He had his feet set. He was
right.
Straight to the ceiling, and he took the forehead to the you know,
yeah.
The breastbone.
Right.
That's a charge 10 times out of 10.
Sure.
And he sold it well, which I love.
Yeah.
But it was a charge.
No doubt about it. Yeah, I mean, Flo has become a guy that I think other teams are going to hate because, like, he does fall on the floor a lot. And I've noticed Jeremy Sohan is kind of that way too. And you know, there's probably times when he just needs to wall up and not, you know, go down on the ground. But you know, if you're a player playing against that, you know, first of all, it subjects you to maybe a little bit more danger, you know, like hesitancy. Yeah, exactly. And you know, so you're also like, you're thinking a little bit too much. I can't aggressively attack the rim because this guy's going to fall, you know? So that's the number one thing that doing that does is it starts to make you hesitant. Exactly like you said.
Everybody last year with Davion, he could sell the charge. Like, he could sell ice to Eskimos, right?
Right.
With the way he sold the charge to the refs. And Flo learned from that.
Yeah.
And he's using it. And even if he doesn't get it, when Jonathan comes in the game behind him, you're like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? This guy's going to beat the crap out of me.
Right. Yeah. You know, Vital was really good at that. Teague. I mean, we had a team full of older pros, Butler, that could sell the calls and, you know, knew exactly when to throw their head back, knew exactly, you know, what body motions to give to the officials, you know, to get calls. And, you know, that was a question I had about this team is, you know, it still remains to be answered to some degree. But I think as far as athletic upside, depth, quality depth, the front court, I mean, the front court is like scary with potential. you know, I think I've told this story before, but ultimately, you know, there's been scouts that have come to Baylor practices and NBA scouts. And when asked about, you know, other teams in the Big 12, you know, some of the feedback is, well, you know, you guys may be equal now, but in March, you're going to be higher ceiling because you have, you know, four or five NBA players, and these other teams have one or two NBA players. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. I think ultimately, you know, Baylor's talent is going to really be discouraging to Big 12 opponents by the time they start to gel and really, you know, as long as the injury bug is kind to them, I think they have a really good shot to be another dominant elite team like they were last year.
Yeah, it's really a shame that the press has been given elsewhere.
Yeah.
But I think the competitive side with our guys, I think there's some fuel there.
Oh yeah.
And you know, you talk about those old guys, Sohan playing with the national team.
Right.
Even though his age is what it is, he's got some of those, you know, the old man that comes into the gym and just always knows where to be, always has got his hand right where you don't want it.
Right.
Finds a way to get the shot. You've got that with those guys.
Yep.
And even though he's young, you know, even though Sohan's that young, that experience gave him some of those moves and that feel. And it complements well with the energy that those younger guys are just providing.
Yeah, I mean,
you
look at the top eight guys that play, and you think about how mature Kendall Brown and Jeremy Sohan are and how they looked the part physically. And, you know, today when the game was on the line, they made big plays. You know, Sohan makes a three when Baylor's trailing, and Kendall Brown comes out of the second half, makes huge plays to give Baylor some cushion. You expect that from Meyer, from Thamba, from Chama Chachua, and from Adam Flagler. And you expect it from James Akinjo because he's got so much experience. But,
right.
But you know, L.J. Yeah. Cryer. Okay, L.J. Cryer just gone against the best backcourt in the nation, you know, all last year, every day in practice. I mean, that is a huge part of developing into a great college guard is if you're going against that type of level of competition. To where, you know, now he's going in games and he's like, this is easier because I saw much better players in practice every day last year. And then you got the two freshmen who, you know, like you mentioned, the Polish national team, the international experience playing against pros. And then, of course, Kendall Brown being at, you know, Sunrise Christian and the prep school circuit last year and playing against all that top level competition. I think it shows that, you know, Baylor's just got a level of preparation that maybe some other teams that have these new pieces don't have.
Yeah, and it's you talk about those guys playing in practice. I mean, you've even seen the development in Dale Bonner.
Yeah.
Going against the level he has since he's been on campus, and he's come a long way.
He looks the part,
you
man.
You know, he's getting
He's getting
meaningful minutes. He's playing well. He's still got a little bit of catching up to do, but he's going to be a contributor some night in January when stuff's just not working.
Right.
And, you know, there's always that one night where that one guy goes off. You're like, man, I'm glad he was there.
So what you're telling me is Zach Loveday and Jordan Turner are going to be first team all Big 12 when these guys finally move on.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go out on that one.
All right, let's. What other basketball have you watched? I mean, I know people are crazy for the University of Texas. Even after they lost to Gonzaga, they were still ranked ahead of Baylor in the AP poll and the coaches poll. I think that has since changed, and I'm sure it will change after Baylor's win against Michigan State, and then after Texas loses to some mid-major team at some point in December. But I mean, are you impressed with what you see there? Have you watched Kansas play? I mean, what's your take on the Big 12 conference race?
I have not seen Kansas play yet, just because, you know, I grew up in Missouri, and so there's a hatred for all things KU,
right?
That just solidified being a member of the Big 12.
Yeah.
And so I just sometimes I refuse to watch them just because.
Sure.
But the Texas thing is the one that's probably the most interesting. There's a ton of pieces, right?
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is there's 40 minutes and five guys to fill 40 minutes.
Right.
How do you get enough shots? How do you get enough minutes? How do you distribute that? And it's got all of the makings to be a disaster.
I'm going to be encouraging that when they come to the Ferrell Center.
I know, right?
Get yours, man. Show out. Yeah.
I know, right? I mean, the reality is they're going to win a lot of games.
Yeah.
But do they have that cohesiveness that is required to get to that next level? I mean, that's one of the things. Gonzaga has a lot of pieces. If they played in a real conference, you know, they would probably be much better prepared for the deeper runs in the tournament. But one of the things that they have is similar to what, you know, Coach Drew has done, is the consistency in the roster turnover is just not what it is with Texas this year.
Right.
And there's something to be said for having the cohesiveness, having a balanced roster, having a plan coming into the season. And I just don't think it's there. Plus it's just Austin. There's too many distractions. the guys on the call today on TV talked about, you know, they were talking about how with Coach Drew, he says, hey, we're boring. We go to the gym, we go to class, we go back to the gym, we wake up tomorrow and we do it all over again. Well, there's some distractions in some of these other places that can prevent some of that.
Yeah, no question. Alvin Brooks always says this, but same old boring habits, you know, is a good mantra for Baylor basketball. And they've certainly proven that it's a successful formula to build a great program and to sustain a great program.
Sure.
Well, so Baylor is now number two in KenPom. This is going to make the Kansas fans absolutely hysterical on social media, I'm sure. So Gonzaga is number one. Baylor's number two. Kansas is number three. The margin's actually pretty close. And then Purdue's number four. But
so that means Jesse Newell has to vote us number two in his weekly poll, right?
It's got to be the way you do it.
That's what he said all along.
I think they beat Michigan State by 13, 87 to 74 on opening night. Let me look. Yeah. Okay. So Baylor has a bigger margin of victory against Michigan State. Baylor is, well, they haven't updated the projected record yet, okay. but I would imagine if Baylor's ahead of Kansas in KenPom, then they're also going to be projected to win the Big 12 or maybe a tie with Kansas. But one thing that I thought was absolutely hilarious, I know Scott Drew is the ultimate sportsman and wasn't thinking about this at all, but I always think it's funny when you're playing in a championship game or against a, you know, a team that thinks they're equal to you, and then you empty your bench at the end and call a timeout.
Yeah.
And then immediately, you know, one of your guys takes a shot when I think there was time on the shot clock. So I think they could have run out the clock. And of course they did run out the clock with, you know, at the very end of the game. But I know, you know, Tom Izzo was probably like, man, he's emptying his bench against me. I'm going to remember that. You know, there's probably a little bit of that, you know, that goes on.
Well, and of course he was, you know, he was sipping on his Starbucks in the first half too. It's, you know, I'm sure it was Earl Grey and it was a lovely blend of Earl Grey, but I'm just over here coaching, sipping my Starbucks.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, it's fun times. I mean, what a great football team we have. What an incredible basketball program we have. I'm happy for our guys. I'm happy for our fans that made the trip to the Bahamas, and to be able to experience the celebration afterwards is pretty cool. And thank you for joining me on this post-game podcast. I'm going to get this tied to an article, post-game article. Oh, the one thing I want to mention, tomorrow, if anyone's listening to this, at 8:30, from 8:30 to 10:30, I mean, we got so many top 10 teams at Baylor, it's hard to keep track of them all. But we are going to have the women's volleyball team at our tailgate. I think about close to 20 of them are going to be at our tailgate. So a great opportunity. Awesome. From 8:30 to 10:30 to take pictures with them. I told the girls, I said, just come and have fun. Play tailgate games, interact with fans, take pictures.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to challenge some of them to pop a shot and see if I can continue winning those games like I did against the men's basketball team. Carnival games are my thing, not the real thing.
The one thing you have going for you there is they can't dunk on you and pop a shot.
I think I'm going to set up a vertical jump test and see if I can out jump Yossi Honor Presley also. I think that's going to be part of the festivities.
I think it'll be close, actually.
Her 42-inch vertical.
Yeah, the old Reebok commercial, show them your 2-inch vertical one. that's what I got.
But yeah, that's going to be a great time. I'll have a solo stove out there if you're worried about warmth. And we do have tents, by the way, so you will not be wet if you're under the tent. So don't worry about the potential for rain. It looks like it's definitely going to rain. By game time, I think the tailgating should be okay, maybe a little drizzle, but it looks like we're going to have some rain for the Texas Tech game.
That's what I've seen, and I'm thankful for my seats underneath the overhang in the second level, and I'm going to be really thankful tomorrow.
Yeah, it's going to affect the crowd, which is a shame. The students are out, you know. It's a tough weekend to draw fans in Waco anyway, because when the students aren't there, you know, places like that's why they did the game in Dallas for so long is to, you know, to do it over Thanksgiving break, where a lot of the alumni live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, just a little bit more convenient. I mean, I'm happy they, you know, move the game back on campus, and it doesn't mean that we're going to play Texas Tech over Thanksgiving week every year. I just happened to fall that way this year, but yeah, I think it's always going to be some attendance challenges, you know, right after Thanksgiving. And it's a shame, because we've got a terrific senior class to, you know, we want to send them out the right way with a win, another chance at 10 wins. And of course, this basketball team has a chance to do something historic, and that's break John Wooden's all time winning streak. And as I say many times, you can't win 14 in a row until you win 13 in a row. So next up, I mean, I want to see us, put the hurt on Arkansas Pine Bluff. Is that who we got next? I think that's right.
I believe it is. Yeah. Yes. And it's, you know, there's,
I think we're going to win that game.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to predict a win against Pine Bluff.
Yep.
And I'm going to predict a win tomorrow, because we are built to win in bad weather.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. We run the ball, defense. I mean, it's a good formula. Well, that'll be exciting. Then we can watch what happens with the, Oklahoma State. Hopefully those rumors keep circulating about Lincoln Riley leaving for LSU, because nothing would be better than to see a disinterested Oklahoma get totally smoked by Oklahoma State, and to keep Texas and OU out of the Big 12 championship game would be, you know, just a fitting end to this conference realignment nonsense.
We could start another rumor about Lincoln right now if you wanted.
I've heard it's a done deal. I heard on LSU Odyssey or something. Some website that's got years and years of credibility.
Yeah. Some dude on Tiger Dropping said 8 years and 100 million. And it's got to be true if it's on the internet.
Exactly. Well, thank you for listening. Those of you that have listened this far, you've been listening to a post-game podcast with Ashley Hodge and Ron Wadley. Baylor is now 7-0, looking to extend that to 8-0 when they take on mighty Arkansas Pine Bluff next Saturday, December 4th. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Go Bears. Sick 'em.
Sick 'em.